You're listening to the Archaeology Podcast Network.
This is the CRM Archaeology Podcast. It's the show where we pull back the veil of cultural resources management, archaeology, and discuss the issues that everyone is concerned about. Welcome to the podcast.
Welcome to CRM Archaeology Podcast, episode 332. And joining me today is Renee in somewhere in Europe. I don't remember where. Where are you right now, Renee?
Bright and sunny Stockholm.
Wow, cool.
In Sweden.
Awesome. I've been there in the winters. I've been there a few times, but only in the winter. So I've never enjoyed it during the summer.
Why did you choose winter?
Oh, it's cold.
I was just going to say, it sounds amazing right now, but why did you choose winter?
Well, it was hockey related.
Oh.
So, yeah, okay. My last career, I refereed some pro hockey there.
It's actually really cold here right now.
Oh.
Yeah, it's freezing. Wow.
Like literally freezing or like?
No, it's like 45.
That's pretty cold. I was going to say from California, that's like, don't go outside.
That's like a blizzard.
That's like cold warning. If it's below 50, there's a warning thing on your phone. Like, warning, it is cold outside. Don't go out.
Car warned me too.
It's below 60. Your car is like, why are you leaving? Like, go. It's a cold day.
Go back inside quickly.
Snow day.
Right. Andrew in sunny Southern California. You're in Southern California right now. Yes.
Why, yes. As I always am. Because it's awesome.
And Bill in Northern California.
Yep.
Hi. And I'm hailing from sunny, kind of, it's sunny, beautiful day in Santa Barbara, California. Today, we're going to talk about Bill's most recent blog post on his blog, Succinct Research. And the blog post is titled, Archaeology Students Just Want Jobs, and it's gaining a little traction on social media. So thought we would, and it seems like just some of the comments that I'm seeing, differences of opinion, sometimes a misunderstanding of the post. So maybe they didn't read it. I don't know. They just read.
Well, if they're a student, we know they didn't read it.
So anyway, I thought that would be a good thing to talk about because there is a lot of, in general, the blog post, and I'll let Bill really introduce it, but it's talking about or responding to the concept of CRM companies creating their own training, which personally, I think we should be. We should have our own training, but training, supplemental training, right? And the idea is that this training, some say, could replace the need for university. I have my own personal opinion on this, of course, as I'm sure the rest of us do. But let's start with Bill. If you could give us an introduction just to get the conversation going.
Yeah, sure. This is coming from two different places. First of all, it is the time of year when my students graduate. And so the ones that were working in my lab, I'm trying my best to get them jobs so that they can just roll straight out of college right into work. And it's working pretty good. I mean, they've got interviews. A couple people actually already, I know one person for sure has a job over the summer, but there's other folks, they have a good pathway towards employment. But the other place that this coming from is, what month is it now? It's like, it's May right now. I think in March, I went and was part of the Airlie House 2.0 group of folks. We met in Arkansas and talked about, many different things, but one of them was training the future generation of archaeologists. And we covered this in a podcast a couple of weeks ago. Folks should check it out. But one of the things that came up in that conversation was building a training certification program that's just outside of the university. And so there's folks, it's not a small number of people that recognize that, the university is not teaching people how to do archaeology. So there is some minimal archaeology training, but it's not what folks need to get a job in cultural resources. And I think we're getting to the point where a lot of companies are wondering, could we just create our own curriculum and get people certified so they can be field techs, because there's a field tech shortage, right? So companies are looking for field techs. Students are not graduating fast enough. They're thinking, can they just bypass the entire university system? And when this idea was first brought up, I was thinking, finally, like, yes, someone has actually decided to bypass the university to teach people how to do cultural resources, because it's clear after me being in a university for 9 years, you cannot look to us to ever change our ways well enough to train people. And there's a lot of reasons behind that. But then I started to think about it for a while, and I was like, well, what does this mean for the people who graduate? Because one of the main things of college is giving you the certificate and the degree for you to move through your entire career. And we know that most people are not going to stay in cultural resources for their whole lives. And so one of my questions was, well, where does this leave the people who finish the certificate? Because they have a certificate to do cultural resources, but that's not the same as a bachelor's degree that can be used to get, you know, leveraged into graduate degrees. You could flip into other career paths to just ask for a degree because you don't actually have a degree. You just have a cultural resources certificate. And I started to realize that the folks who finish this, like, this is not necessarily going to be as fruitful as it could be for their entire, like, long life. They're going to live a lot longer than, you know, the companies want to use them as field techs because you can't be a field tech forever. And so I started to see that as a shortcoming. The other shortcoming is I have worked for CRM companies before, and I can absolutely imagine the total bottom of the barrel, you know, the absolute cheapest iPad clicking thing as their CRM training that was built by, you know, the very cheapest coders, and that there's no actual hands-on, you know, face-to-face time because cultural resources folks are busy. They don't have the time to do the work that professors are doing. And so I could totally see this being absolutely rubbish training. And then people leave. And once again, they still don't have the skills to do cultural resources, but they have this bogus certificate that's conferred upon them by ACRA or the Society for American Archaeology or something like that. And I was like, yeah, that's not going to be good either, because then all they did is learn how to click through modules on multiple choice tests and keep clicking the mouse long enough to get the certificate to come out. I don't understand how that's going to be very good. And then I realized, you know, what we really need is cultural resources folks to be working, especially at the community college level, to get the certificates going, because I could look and see there are already programs like that, like the Pima Community College program in Tucson, Arizona. They've long been having an archaeological technician certificate. Those folks that come out of that program are immediately hireable because it's Southwestern archaeologists that are teaching them how to do the stuff. And so I was like, this is the system that should be replicated in California and Ohio and Minnesota and all around, because that mirrors the same push that we already have for vocational training. But then the other thing that I realized is there is a whole push for folks to go into the trades. And a lot of the conversations are, well, get a job now. You know, you can do HVAC right now. You can do plumbing right now and you'll make a ton of money. That's because there's a shortage in HVAC and plumbers. Students are hearing that call and they are joining in rapid, you know, big numbers into these certification programs. But we all know that once tons of people are certified, and those big wages are no longer going to be there because now there's tons of people who have those certifications. So that's why I would like for archaeologists to think about the larger, longer game. You know, if folks are getting certifications through community colleges, then they can also build those later on when they're not being field techs. They can expand that to a full bachelor's degree in a lot of different fields because they're getting an associate's in anthropology with a specialization in cultural resource management. So at the end of the day, I mean, there's more. I don't want to take up everyone's time here with this because there's a lot more in this blog post. But at the end of the day, companies, I don't see how any cultural resource management company is going to do as good as a quality community college program could do. And that really ACRA and the SAA and SHA, they should really be supporting figuring out which statewide or regional universities they can get this program in and then put the cash in there so that they can make this a real program. Because, of course, you know, we could talk more about it, but universities are not rolling in dough, you know, and it seems like we're charging all this tuition and that there's all this admin and all, you know, everything that everyone loves to say about academia. But at the end of the day, if there's no money that starts off a program, then the university is never going to put money. They're not going to just put money into something where they don't see that money is going to come out on the other side. So if there's not anything to prime the pump to get people to, you know, start going to these programs, it's never going to happen.
Yeah. Wow. That's a lot. You know, this is interesting because we talked about this a little bit in the last episode about Airlie House. And you know, I brought up this concept a few years ago in an SCA panel, and everybody like clutched their pearls. Not that I'm saying I came up with anything new, but it was something that people were not talking about then at all. And I feel strongly, first of all, there needs to be collaboration that cannot disappear. So this cannot be a replacement idea. That's not where we should be going with this. We should be going with a collaborative approach, a highly nuanced approach to training from CRM perspective and a training in the university world. So I think that there's different avenues. I think that there could be training just for those that want to dig. I think it can go as far as, yes, they have to be trained to a certain extent, but there can be different levels. So one could be excavation, just pure excavation. They understand typologies and what they're looking for during the excavation. But we need, you know, again, I think it's really limited to say you have to have a bachelor's degree to be excavating. There's no reason why we couldn't have people that are excavating and having people with degrees supervising that excavation, making sure that it's at every unit, making sure that it's working or that it's being excavated properly. And that would save money and it would be efficient if it was done right. And how do we know this? Because that's the model all over classical archaeology, right? That's how they do it. So there's no reason why this can't happen in CRM. The other thing is we'll be talking more about this, and I'm going to put a little plug in. We're going to be starting an SCA, the Society for California Archaeology podcast, and we'll be addressing, you know, subjects that are specific to California archaeology. I'm the current president of the society. Andrew's the incoming president.
I can feel the power coursing through my veins already.
And oh my gosh, a dark lord in the making. I've seen Star Wars enough to see how this works.
Anakin,
I see you.
We're rubbing our hands at all times.
Yeah.
Ooh, and all the power. But the idea here is we really are trying to make a difference. And the podcast that we'll be having for the SCA will kind of outline this a little bit more. But, you know, each president has an agenda. My agenda that I decided is education. And we are working towards our next annual meeting that will happen next spring will be accredited. All workshops will be accredited. And it's just going to be an accreditation system that we are going to create. And we're going to start it because everybody keeps talking about it and it's not happening. And the idea here is not to replace universities, because there's plenty of professional groups that do this, and it's continuing education. So they go to college, they get their degree, they move into the next stage, and you can't say that what you learned 30 years ago is still applicable, especially in disciplines that require that you know stay up to date on regulations and ways of working and technology. And so that's the idea behind the accredited program that we're creating for SCA at the annual meetings. To me, it's silly to have a meeting where there's very little organization that specifically goes towards training of the people that are attending these annual meetings. It makes no sense to me. There should be a portion of it that is aimed at a specific curriculum meant to train people and keep them updated in their knowledge, no matter what level and amount of experience they have. So, but again, this is not a replacement. This is collaboration.
Yeah.
So I think there's different levels. We could have people that are just learning, and it's a great introduction. You don't have to go to college right away. You can go and learn how to excavate, try it out, and see if this is something you want to do and you want to invest 4 years in. And to me, the ideal would be give it a couple years. Go in there, work 1 or 2 years, and then say, you know what? I want to do this, but I know, with all respect, that I cannot be a good archaeologist if I don't have all of the in-depth, you know, the theory. Theory is important. We bag on it, but it is important. It helps you understand how to think in this space. So then you get to a point, well, you know what? I do want to do this. And then you go to university, you get your degree. and then the continuing education at these annual meetings or other ways of doing it. But an accredited program can then move you through your career and make sure that you're continuing to learn and you're staying updated on your knowledge.
Well, that's good. And I know we need to move to the next segment, but I actually would advocate for yes, destroy the university. Yes, go around them. I'll explain more in the next section, I'll tell you. Yeah. Don't rely on us.
All right. We'll be right back with segment two. Welcome back to CRM Archaeology Podcast, episode 332. Today, we're talking about Bill's blog post called Archaeology Students Just Want Jobs. And we finished off with, you know, Bill gave us a really good primer for the blog post. And then I had my response talking about, you know, accreditation and things that we're doing with the Society for California Archaeology and the idea that there's should be a nuanced approach. We should be looking at, you know, different levels of training. And the only way to do that is through collaboration between universities, or this is my opinion, universities and the CRM schools. And then Bill just dropped a bomb and said, I said, you know, universities should be a part of it.
Yeah. He's,
yeah, get rid of them. No, they don't. They don't need to be part of
yeah.
it.
Yeah. Yeah. No.
Elaborate on that.
Yeah, exactly. So, like, first of all, I do think it's noble and good for you all to have accreditation because I've taken some killer workshops before at conferences. And yes, I got a certificate and I totally learned a lot about like identifying Japanese ceramics or plastic artifacts. But that was just like, you know, it just was for me. I wanted to learn about those artifacts or I wanted to learn about 3D modeling using different softwares. So that's why I took those workshops. But like,
what did that certificate do for you?
Like, well, I mean, I learned a lot.
You learned a lot, but that
yeah, and I had a bunch of references that super helped me when it comes to plastic artifacts. Enough. Like, I didn't know it about you know the different stuff.
Right.
And then I took Kimberly Wooten's plastic artifacts workshop at the SHA and learned a ton about plastic artifacts that I didn't know about. Same thing with Japanese artifacts. I took one by Renee Campbell and Doug. Oh man, I can't remember the guy's name. Anyway, they taught a great workshop. I learned a lot about identifying Japanese ceramics, and it did continue my education. But like, I wanted to do that for myself because I just wanted to know. I think with a certificate program or some kind of like continuing education, then it forces people to continue learning, right? Because when I worked for CRM and the conferences would come around and be like, well, they paying me, so I ain't going. And it's like, okay, well, in this case, you know, you can further your own education by learning about cemeteries or something that you think is really interesting. And yes, they will pay you for the day you're going. And yes, you may have to actually go into your greasy little, you know, coin purse and pull some money out to do a thing, right? Because there's always this whole like, I ain't got no money. I do archaeology, so I'm broke. But like, you know, yes, doing this is important. And then you get the reward of the continuing education.
As a manager, I am not... I've got a hard time paying for everybody on our team to go to these society. This is part of the inspiration behind this. Everybody wants to go to the SCAs. That's one of the first questions when somebody's being hired. Do you guys promote and support continuing education? Or they don't say that. They say, do you support or pay for me to go to a conference?
Yeah.
Well,
this
honestly,
is a way. This is a way to get
it. It's a freaking waste of money where it is right now. And this is coming from somebody who's involved, current president of the SCA. It's a waste of money. Why is it a waste of money? Because it really is. Do the people actually show up? And a lot of people go to the meetings, right? And then there's no organization for what they're learning.
Yeah.
The abstracts are submitted. They're organized according to what's being talked about and certain, you know, agendas that people want to move forward. So some people have panels already organized and others are just articles and or separate presentations that are then put together. But there's no curriculum like, okay, we have a organized curriculum and we are trying to teach this. And there are certain segments that apply to different things, historic archaeology, pre post contact Native American archaeology. There is no organization when it comes to that.
Yeah.
And it's all been on academia and it's really organized because the idea of publish or perish, that's where these annual meetings are really focused on. Instead of actually teaching people how to become better archaeologists, no matter what level they've been working 1 year or 30 years,
yeah,
you should always be continuing your education. And so for me, it's a drink fest. For me, it's a social thing. And it's not, I'm not paying you to go to a social event. In fact, I'd rather you go to another non-archaeology conference and learn other aspects of CRM and how they connect to archaeology. That I would rather that actually than pay for somebody to go to a conference that they're not getting anything out of. And I don't even know if they're going to the workshops, right?
Yeah.
So that I'm paying for. It is it's personally a waste of money. I'm not getting, and there's no, the cost benefit analysis is not good.
Yeah. Well, I don't want to sidetrack away from the reason why I said you shouldn't wait on academia. Here's why. There's no incentive whatsoever in higher education to ever teach anything that has to do with cultural resources, because that is not where we get the money. We get the cash from, at least at the place where I work, it's a combo of block grant from the central campus, with endowments that are donations, with research fellowships that folks can get, right? So some people are on soft money. And then in other departments, not anthropology, but other departments, there's actually collaborations with like companies or industries, right? Okay, so if the full-time equivalent FTE pay is not coming from that industry, then there's no motivation for us to do anything besides keep with our Pokemon style of having, got to get them all, got to get someone from every continent, got to get someone from different contexts with a bit of, wide shade of our different colors and a wide background of our different beliefs, right? Because then that shows that we have this breadth of this department, right? Rather than be good at one thing, we're just going to show that we have pretty good people at like everything around the world, right? That's the strategy that's been around for 200 years. That's the strategy that's going to keep going because industry has not intervened to take a different approach.
And now with California archaeology, and now with some of what's going on in the universities, we're not even teaching California archaeology, period.
Well, we could talk more about that entire phenomenon, right? Because it's not just like, regulations or stipulations and limits on what's getting people to do California archaeology. It's also that there's not necessarily an incentive at California universities to hire people who work right nearby, right? Okay, right. So if you actually want this thing to happen, you are going to have to get FTEs and sponsor this, right? It's not just, giving the department 25K and saying, hey, I need you to change some of the curriculum, because we'll just laugh at that and throw it in our trough, and we'll just keep eating with all the corn that we've been eating from everywhere else, right? Like, sweet, thank you for that. You have to actually sponsor the FTE, right? And guess what? It's cheaper to hire a professor than it is to hire like a crew chief in most states, dude. Most people in CRM are making way more than your professor at almost every single state, man. I've looked at the salary info. It's cheaper to hire a professor than it is to hire a project manager for a CRM company, right? Now, if a couple of different companies put together the money, then they totally could afford it. And when you show up to a department and say, we got this person with a PhD, they do CRM, we want them to teach, two classes or something like that every semester, and we'll cover their salary and benefits. It's basically a free professor. And it'll be difficult for universities to pass that up. But I'll tell you that there's some, like the top universities in California, you have a lot of the top universities that will still laugh at that and say, there's still nothing in it for us. That's why I say, don't worry about the top universities. Don't even come to Stanford or UCLA and say that you're going to pay for a professor. Go to the community colleges, because the community college system is being supported by the state of California right now. It is vocation oriented. So they already have, connections and a whole entire like idea that the professors who are teaching in these departments will be more vocation oriented. And then you say, all of us in Southern California have gotten together. We want this FTE. They're going to teach four classes on field survey, methods, budgeting, and just overall field management, right? And they can set it up so that the person's teaching it in a certain sequence along with the existing anthropology classes. So they are getting linguistics, ethnography, sociocultural, they are getting the full breadth of the experience for 2 years, but they're also getting someone who's teaching them actual stuff. And you can choose the CRM person. Say it's got to be someone with a PhD, at least 10 years at the project manager level. This is the perfect job for a retired principal investigator. It's the perfect job.
Okay. So, you know,
that's what I'm saying. Or they can also sponsor professors who are already doing it at the community college or at the state level or whatever. You could give research grants to us. But like I said, if you give it to me, we just throw it in there with everyone else, with the NCAA and, or we not the NCAA, but the NBA, with all the other, the Apple, Google, we just throw it into that huge hopper of all this slush fund that we use to sponsor all this stuff. Then it's impossible for me to get it out to actually teach. But if you go directly to a department that doesn't have a slush fund from Amazon and everybody else, it has a different impact.
Yeah. You know, I feel like you guys have been talking about me this whole time and I'm just like sitting here, you know, oh, community colleges. But I totally agree. And what's funny, so Bill brought up one or two things there that like the word FTE or FTES, that basically means like funding per student, right? Bill and I both deal with this. But what's great about the community college world, that's kind of what the whole thing is. It's just all about funding equals students. Like, that's it. There's no publisher parish, none of that, all that stuff. So Bill, I would say you're, you know, totally correct on that. And, you know, at Moorpark, this is, you guys have just been describing my life. Like, this is what I do, right? We don't have a certificate, which I should get on and make one, but we really
But if you had two other colleagues that were just similar to you with experience, then it would be easier for you to make the certificate because you wouldn't have to do all the work.
Right. But we have an AA. We have an AA in archaeology, which is really the same. It's what you're saying, because the AA in archaeology is take the 4 Saturday classes, which are basically the things you just listed, field survey, excavation, you know, and then plus at the same time, you take the like intro of the 4 fields, intro to cultural, intro to biological. Right. So from the beginning, this was my plan. So, Bill, you outlined what I do, which is like really funny.
Just help Andrews multiply the Andrews. I'm telling you, just do that.
You need more of me. But as I joke, it's true. It's like I have a PhD. I've done the academic thing. But for Bill and I find that our background is really similar. Like I worked in CRM a bunch just through my life in academia to pay the bills. You know what I mean? Like that's what I did. So I learned CRM on the fly as I went to school. So now I'm at that point where I have the bona fides to be a professor, but I also have the CRM experience so I can teach that to my students, you know? And so it's people, and I'm not alone, you know, people like me, that's what we need. And then you just teach this stuff at the community college level. Then you can move onward to the 4-year, you know, if you want, or you can get a job in CRM or some of both. I was telling my students, you know, work in CRM for a year, see how it goes, then transfer to Cal State, Channel Islands, or, you know, whatever, you know, CSUN and go from there, or transfer to a UC. That most of my students basically do that. They work some in CRM as they transfer, usually to a UC, like UC Santa Barbara or UCLA or something, but that's how it
is. Yeah.
I still think though, and this just shows like the nuance. It's really complex and there needs to be a group. It like Airlie, if that's what they're trying to do, that's great. But there needs to be a really like thought out process, like you're saying, Bill and Andrew, of how are we going to attack this? You can't just say, oh, let's do this. I mean, for a little while, I was thinking SCAs. I mean, I thought, you know what? We just need to start something. We got to start with something. We can adjust it later, but we've got to get something down. Somebody's got to put their foot out and let's start something. Yeah. For teaching at the community colleges, that's a big part of it. That also needs to be supplemented by currently working CRM professionals. Because even as experienced as Bill and Andrew are in CRM, you haven't been working in CRM the last it changes 100% all the time.
Right. But see how I feel on that is then that's maybe where the CRM companies do a bit more of the teaching, because you also have to realize you only got 2 years. So you're not. Yeah. And like they're not, no matter what, it's not really enough time to get really into the weeds of the upper end CRM stuff. Yes. You know, it's just enough time to basically be like, here's the basics in Anthro. Plus, here's the basics in excavation and mapping.
So
and stuff,
this is where CRM can commit with money, but also with time, where they're paying their people to come in and teach at these community college programs. And they're paying some money. I mean, I'm just telling you, like, I keep hearing this, oh, CRM should hand over money. CRM should put money into the, you know, I'm telling you, the profit margin is not as high as people think. And so, yes, there is some savings, but in order for CRM companies to buy into doing that, we have to have an actual program. Otherwise, we're putting money into a pit of nothingness.
Well, I think, so this has been my like reality for a long time, what I wanted to do, because CRM is not taught in school and we had to learn like the hard way, school of hard knocks to get into CRM. I mean, my dream of being in academia didn't happen. So I had to go and be this like shovel bum forever, but I didn't know anything from academia. I came in like, oh, I know what I'm doing. Academia taught me everything about archaeology. And then as I leveled up my career, I'm like, you know what? These kids are coming in. They don't know anything. Why don't we have a class like at the community college level? Because I advocate community college all the way, like the realities of archaeology. And that looks at what CRM, like not in the academic sense, but in the CRM world, like this is what you're going to expect. And we don't have that. So, I mean, we have the four fields, but, you know, the reality is you can make money in archaeology. This is what it is. These are the steps. This is what you do. So just having that hands-on experience as well really like hones in. If this is what you're going to do in archaeology, you're not going to go be digging pyramids in the jungle or anything like that. This is where you're going to make money and actually have a career if you want to do it. So I think starting in that community college level is the best way to do it. And doing public outreach and like, I agree with all the conference stuff. Like we should have workshops all the way through, but working for myself, working in, you know, a big engineering firm, we won't have time to, you know, teach people. I do it on the fly when I get my field techs in because they don't know what they're doing half the time, but that's okay because I like teaching people. That's just me. But like, how we can't just hire people with no experience. And that's not, I don't do the hiring, but it's like, they're very weird on who they hire. They look at their CVs like, oh, they don't have any experience, so we can't do anything. But I don't know. I think teaching at the basic level and then moving up from there would be the best way forward.
Yeah, totally agree. Let's take a break and we'll see you on the other side. Welcome back to CRM Archaeology Podcast, episode 332. Today, we are talking about Bill's most recent blog post on his blog, Succinct Research. The blog post is titled Archaeology Students Just Want Jobs, talking about the idea of CRM industry creating their own training programs and Bill's response. Highly recommend that you read the article or the blog post. The link is in our show notes. And, you know, we ended the last segment talking a little bit or just inferring internships, the concept of internships in CRM archaeology. And I know Bill has some things to say about that. So, Bill?
Yeah, you know, as you mentioned, it has been getting some traction online, Facebook forums and stuff for archaeology field technicians, and the results have been mixed. But a lot of folks who work for cultural resources companies say, oh, well, we've had an internship program for X amount of years. And, you know, oh, well, we have an internship. And my response to that is, where and what are you talking about? Because I've been a professor for 10 years, and I have talked to numerous companies around the Bay Area. Some of them say that they have an internship, but I seriously in that post told people to make me eat my words, to go ahead and show me their internship, like show me how you're paying people that don't have a bachelor's to learn how to do CRM. And there's only a couple people who actually have true internships where they take people out for the summer and they have them work as archaeology technicians. And they pay them as archaeology technicians. They get per diem. They go out and work on the site. They do all the stuff. And then there is some training that's added onto it, right? And so the response is, oh, well, we have an internship. Well, where? Like, I never have even heard of it, man. I've been reaching out for years. And all these companies that say they have internships, they just melt away when I'm like, hey, I got four kids that all need a job. Where are you at? They all just shrink into the background like, oh, well, I don't have time or money. So this is, once again, a call for CRM to finally put its money where its mouth is at.
My experience is exactly the same as Bill's. It's just a Xerox copy of Bill's. They do this like, oh, we have our internship. I'm like, I know many people in the Southern California CRM world and academic world, and I know a ton of students. I think I know zero who've ever been in an internship. I always just tell my students to straight up apply for a job and don't even bother.
So do I. And I try to network them into jobs, into real jobs rather than internships.
So I really think, you know, the concept of internships, and this isn't just unique to CRM. A lot of it is, quite honestly, it's an opportunity. You are giving your time to get connection with a certain company. And that's why people are more careful, at least in other disciplines, where they do their internship, because that gives them something on their resume that they worked for a high level company, a company that hopefully that internship can be transferred into a real job, an actual job later on down the road. For CRM archaeology, I think, you know, it really is, when I see internships, most of the time, it's a glorified as needed job. And in some cases, it's a way of paying for an as needed job, paying somebody at a lower, much lower rate than you would otherwise.
Yeah.
Because they have no experience. So I think really, I don't say we have internships, although people get stuck on that. But I have students that come to us and I said, listen, I will hire you as an as needed employee. And I guarantee you are going to get a great amount of experience as long as we can, you know, keep you working regularly than you would in any quote unquote internship. So, and then we still get to pay you what you should be paid at the entry level pay, but I'm not going to call it an internship because that's not what it is. And in fact, any as needed, if you really are working for a good company who is investing in you as an as needed, which all companies should, that is right there an internship for you. Yeah. You're going to get much more experience. Yep. There's no CRM company. We have training. Another way of looking at it is, you know, are you getting HazWhopper training? That's not always needed. But if there's a company that is willing to give you HazWhopper training and these other kinds of types of training that you can then go and take and use when you become full-time, that's great. But I just highly suggest anybody, until there's a program together that CRM companies have come together, like ACRA, some of these associations or SCAs have really created, this is what CRM companies should do for in order to be an accredited internship. I mean, that's another concept just off the top of my head that might be a good idea because, or they don't, you can say this is a SCA approved internship, so to speak, because the curriculum there is an actual curriculum there.
Yeah. Well, in the article, there's one person whom I've been talking to about this, and she's, you know, gone back and forth. Bethany Matthews runs a company called Antiquity Consulting in Washington State. And during the pandemic, Washington State started a field tech training certification program. And I've heard people go back and forth on whether it's amazing or not. But they, during the pandemic, started to teach students, you know, CRM folks that were part of the Association for Washington Archaeology. They, you know, got museum collections and then talked with native people about these, or had native people talk to students about the meaning of these collections. And they showed people how to dig a shovel probe and these different things. And when they were done, they got a certificate. And the companies, because they needed people, were, you know, they were aware that this was a Washington State thing. And so they were willing to accept folks who had just finished, you know, their associates or hadn't finished their bachelor's to come on and work as field techs. And so Bethany also has a summer program where students apply, they get paid the same amount, they go out to the field, they're taught, you know, as they learn by doing, basically, right? They learn by doing cultural resources, and she's willing to take a gamble on people who haven't finished, right? So it's similar to what you're saying here in California, getting hired onto the on-call list, but these are like few and far between, because I continue hearing about how we're not teaching the right things in the university. And, you know, there's only so many of us, right? And we're all going to teach what we know. But at the end of the day, like, the companies don't ever seem to be putting it up. It seems to me like, you know, the folks on this podcast and a couple other people are the only ones who have an active program to bring students on. And then also in the blog post, I say, I don't think CRM will do it. I don't really think CRM will ever do it, because for 80 years, there has been calls there's been articles telling us what we need to do, telling us how we need to do it. And there has not been a single step taken by CRM, the industry, to do any of it. So I don't think that they're going to do it.
Well, then I think I'm starting to really like my idea. I'm gonna take the patting on myself on the back that Andrew's so good at.
Good.
I like the idea.
I love myself.
I mean, the proof is going to be
with myself. Yes,
the proof is going to be when you have a pipeline of go online. You're not always asking for people because you have a pipeline of people that were taught that live in the area, that know California, they know the stuff, right? You've got a program.
So this is where collaboration between the university professors that are doing the right thing, trying to do the right thing, and the CRM companies that are trying to do the right thing, where that communication is happening and the whole thing can be pushed and inspired and motivated by the students. And the students are going to say, okay, wait a minute. I'm looking for my first job, or I'm looking for, my first job while I'm in school, even quote unquote internship. And I see that this company has taken the time and made the commitment to be an SCA approved, ACRA approved, whatever the association is, SAA approved internship. And then you know that you're learning, you know exactly what you're learning. These companies have said, yes, we have collaborated with academia and with these different societies, and we have come up with this curriculum, and we are committing to, if you work for us in the internship, you are going to learn these things. And that's, to me, that's the only solution to get some continuity, because right now you do have people, you have good people in CRM and good people at schools that are trying to make a difference. They are trying to do the right thing. But the problem is that the students don't know who those people are, because everybody, it's piecemeal. Everybody's finding their own solution. So, and that's good because it's getting better. But now we get to the point where we have to be more organized so that the students know where to go. They don't just happen to stumble across a good company to work for or stumble across a good program. I didn't know. When I decided to go into archaeology, the reason I ended up at Moorpark was because it was close to my home. But if I knew where to look and what I was supposed to look for, you know, I still would have ended up in Moorpark. But if I lived somewhere else, and I found out that Moorpark had this program, I might go there instead of the one that's close to my home, right? So I think we just need to be more organized. The people that are doing the right things, have the right ideas here, we need to organize and really get a system going.
I know we're like running out of time too, but the other thing that we're going to face is a degree glut, right? So we right now have a enrollment cliff where there's 20, last year was the highest number of college age demographic people that we can expect in the United States going forward for like as long as we'll be alive. Right. But with this huge, you know, chunk of students that are going through the system, they're all coming out with degrees. Right. So now we have a lot of really qualified people who have degrees. This system that you're talking about, by having people work in companies and get taught, also fulfills the dreams of a lot of people like Renee that wanted to teach. And they actually did teach in graduate school as graduate student assistants, or even had their own classes. Now they get a chance to teach people in CRM companies, because that's something that's like totally overlooked, that there are more and more PhDs and people who have masterses that taught, and they really did like teaching. They like working with students, but they do cultural resources and they have no outlet for that.
That's a great point. You know, because I could see, even just to use Renee as an example, yeah, she would be great at that, right? That's using her skill set in this like slightly different zone.
Yeah, exactly.
Like my dream would be to teach what I've learned through CRM or like academia, whatever, just to new and up and coming students, because there's so many kids that do want to get into our profession, but they don't know how. And I would love to be that advocate to be like, this is what you do. Here are the steps. Do you really want to do this? And I would think, you know, I just want to teach kids to just be like, it's fun. You can make money. Like, I always want to reiterate, you can make money in, you know, CRM. You can. It's not, oh, I just shovel bum. No, you can. It's like, how do I get into like a community college or whatever to teach? Would my skill set be even like, you know, would it be overlooked by the academic gods and be like, oh, you work in CRM, never mind. That's not, what would that do? Would that be conducive to what we're teaching our students? Like, what would that do? like, Andrew, would you invite me one day to come teach at one of your classes?
Like, no, well, no. Next question.
I'm always looking for people to come to class or to Zoom into class. Like, I'm always flexible, and I'm also willing to Zoom into other people's classes too. So that's, yes, I'm open to that. But, you know, I think that there can be more than one, right? Like, it doesn't have to just be academia, because I could tell you, Renee, being inside the sausage machine, I don't know if the difference between making the sausage or being the sausage, I don't know if there is that much of a difference.
Like, you're when such you're a in sausage, academia, like, dude. Huh,
interesting. Like, so you're grinding things up, and I'm the thing that's grinding them up, but I'm also getting grinded up. Like, what an interesting dialectic there. But you know, there are a lot of folks who really did want to teach, and I think there's more than one pathway to teach. And I do really think in the future, because, like, I mean, dude, we're entering a world where we kind of need all hands on deck. And I know that there's political things and social media things going on, and, you know, they're bagging on education and dragging people for being smart or dragging people for reading and stuff like that. But I'm just shaking my head like, yeah, that'll work itself through when everybody's, like, done with the distraction. And there's going to be, like, you know, troglodytes that just stare at their phone all day, and then the rest of us who are doing everything. And a lot more people are going to want to be in the society of people who are doing the things instead of the people who are just, you know, standing around looking at their phone. And that we're going to need a lot of different kinds of education. And it's not just going to be college. Like, there's going to be a lot of different things in the future that people are learning skills. And I think that there's more pathways for teachers now than ever before.
Yeah. You know, on that note of, like, people wanting to do stuff, I can't remember if I said this on this podcast or not. I feel like I didn't, but I was at the SAAs recently. And I have to say, for the first time ever, I noticed that the CRM section of the SAAs was off the hook. It was the one with all the energy, all the people there.
Yep,
it was loud. For the first time, I'm like, all the academic stuff was kind of quiet, kind of tired, but the CRM one was where all the energy was. So there is a real movement, and it was all young people too, you know. So it was, I was really happy to see it. I was super surprised. I didn't think something as stodgy as the SAAs would, that this would happen like that, but it totally did.
Well, I think, like, people are now, like, academia's kind of like archaeology academia. People are not really looking at it anymore. They're looking at, like, we can do archaeology, not in this academic realm, but the CRM realm. This is pretty cool. Yeah. I think the platforms that are happening, like social media and podcasts or whatever, are really bringing to light. There's stuff outside that whole pyramids in the jungle type, that romantic archaeology.
I think you're right. It's becoming cool, which is a great thing. Like, that's what it needs, you know?
I do think, though, that, you know, there's going to be, you know, no surprise, a learning curve. Because, yes, as we get, and I'm seeing it now, we get professors that are starting to realize that the only way they can continue in archaeology at this point is to go into CRM. The problem is that they come into CRM with that same mindset, and they want to apply the academic mindset in CRM, and that just doesn't work. So they're, and I know this is going to be hard for some PhDs to swallow, but they're going to have to be retrained. They're not going to be able to just slip into, you know, CRM archaeology and think that they can, you know, their PhD is good enough. I mean, they definitely are going to have to be retrained to a point. You know, I haven't seen any posts on it. We actually did a podcast on it a couple of years ago about this program called Cheeky Scientist. Do you remember that? We talked about.
I do.
Yeah. And there's this guy that kind of started it's almost like a help, I don't know, some kind of organization to help PhDs transition into the professional world, because they're realizing that, you know, the academia is just not going to support it's changing.
Yeah.
And so he was teaching people how to do that. And that is not happening in anthropology or archaeology.
Well,
and I've hired some. It does not work out very well.
I know. We could talk. We actually need an entire podcast on, like, graduate student education and training. But I could tell you one of the main reasons why is all the professors, like, if you don't have full on gray hair, you have salt and pepper when you're hired. Like, people are coming in older than ever before. And, you know, there's your like intellectual growth is in that PhD period. And so if, you know, get hired in the 1990s, you're really stuck in like 94 as far as like, you know, you're where you're at. And I don't really see a lot of professors that move beyond it because the machine makes you stay in that role forever. Like, you're not allowed to really like leave and go and do a whole bunch of other stuff. You're supposed to stay the Mayanist, stay focused on Black history, right? Like, and so in that situation, you've got a bunch of ultra old geriatric 70 and 80 year old professors that are still taking on students and seriously thinking that the world is like it is in the 1900s. And there's no way to get that through. Once again, that's another reason why I should not look to academia to fix this, because people who have been doing this stuff for 20 to 30 years are fully immersed, man. Like Kool-Aid, stomach swollen with Kool-Aid. Yeah. They have drank it all. So you can't be asking some horse that's walked on the same trail its entire life to try to go off that trail. Like, it's not possible.
Right. And, you know, there is, it's also attitude. There's a level of arrogance.
Well, yeah. But that's, you
what
know,
are you talking about?
As the perpetual shocks of being in academia are just buffeting us from side to side, there's also a level of like resignation and just depression at this situation that everyone's in, right? And you can see someone who's a million years old that can't even cope with it, that's having trouble with Zoom, being in a lot of problems, you know, and being like, you know, I want to move on. And then people who think that they got their dream only to find out they can't say the word Black or gay for their whole career, whether they say it in public or say it on Zoom or say it on TikTok or anything, they'll immediately get fired by these weird villains that are constantly lurking. Like, you can see how there's a whole corner that's super depressing, right?
You should be fired.
Not until I get that retirement, sir.
You're not allowed to say the word Black, Bill. You're not allowed.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you should look at like everything I've done over the last year. I'm like, yeah, dude, the CIA, like the Doge fully. There's an entire like file cabinet of my shit in there. Like, we should get this guy. The second he screws up, we're getting him.
All right. Well, this has been a fun and enlightening podcast. And thanks, everyone, for the contributions. And we'll see you in the field.
Bye, everybody.
See you guys next time.
Keep on rocking.
That's it for another episode of the CRM Archaeology Podcast. Links to some of the items mentioned on the show are in the show notes for this podcast, which can be found at www.arcpodnet.com/CRMArcPodcast. Please comment and share anywhere you see the show. If you'd like us to answer a question on a future episode, email us. Use the contact form on the website or just email chris@archaeologypodcastnetwork.com. Support the show and the network at arcpodnet.com/members. Get some swag and extra content while you're there. Send us show suggestions and interview suggestions. We want this to be a resource for field technicians everywhere, and we want to know what you want to know about.
Thanks for listening to this podcast. The Archaeology Podcast Network's chief editor is Rachel Roden. Our executive producer is Ashley Airy. Our social media and newsletter coordinator is Matilda Siebrecht. The APN was founded by Chris Webster and Tristan Boyle on December 1st, 2014. We're supported by our amazing podcast hosts, many volunteers, and listeners like you. Check out membership at www.arcpodnet.com/members.
This has been a presentation of the Archaeology Podcast Network. Visit us on the web for show notes and other podcasts at www.archpodnet.com. Contact us at chris@archaeologypodcastnetwork.com.